Meeting with the secretariat, civilian secretariat's office. Let me take this opportunity first to greet you and to welcome you to this important meeting. Important because if we have it right here, we are most likely to have it right during the course of the year, and if we have it wrong at this stage, we are most likely to be very wrong during the course of the year. And as such, we regard these meetings as very important. We are going to get, in fact, allow the secretariat to present to us their annual performance plans, together with their strategic plan and also their budget. We take it that it will not be, we're not going to say long or short, it will just be a meeting. Let me indicate that we did receive the documents and we appreciate the fact that, despite the fact that we just informed you last week on Friday, that you are now going to appear today before the portfolio committee, but we received these documents at least Monday, which we appreciate very much. But also, let me really say that we received the document that is assisting us to get an understanding of what the National Treasury wants included in the annual performance plan, as well as the strategic plan. Just reading this makes it easy for us to know what will be happening in that office, and if we're to call you to account on anything, what is it that we'll be expecting to have happened, and if it has not happened, we'll be knowing that, of course, you've got to give us reasons on why that has not happened or has not been achieved. And that really we are appreciating, particularly from the office of the secretariat, that has an important responsibility to advise the minister, even on policy matters. It is important that you try by all means possible to do things according to instructions that are there. But that does not mean that we do not have questions and issues to raise. But I think it is important to start by just acknowledging that. When I read these documents yesterday, even if I was quite exhausted, but I was still able to read them because they are readable. Let me take this opportunity to, in fact, let me allow the secretariat without any waste of time to take us through the documents, and then after you have presented everything, then we'll allow members to ask questions. Thank you very much. Over to you.
The delegation, because I think it's changed and it's also got bigger since our last since we last met with you. I think people would be aware of Batupi, who has been at the previous presentations, who is the office manager and the secretary of police's office. Nolotando Kuba, who's the PA to the secretary of police. Mr. Zemo, I think the committee would be aware of. He's in charge of he's the chief director responsible for partnerships. Advocate Ontonga, I just wanted to introduce to you. The committee may not be aware, but at the beginning of this year, the head of policy and research, Mr. Kinnis, had to leave, largely due to family commitments. He is, however, still actively involved with us and is serving as a member of our reference group on the policy and research unit. So it wasn't a parting of ways as much of him having, and Advocate Antong was brought in on a contract basis pending the advertisement of the position as acting head of policy and research. Mr. Soman, I think people know, he's been with the Secretariat for a long time, who is heading up our support services program. Listen, Kuute, I think the Portfolio Committee may have met her this year because she's attended a couple of the sessions. She's also new to the Secretariat. At the end of, in October last year, we had, when we were going through our performance and evaluating our different performance, one of the areas of weaknesses in the Secretariat was the Monitoring and Evaluation Unit. We have restructured that unit and capacitated that unit, and Ms. Kuwita came on board also on a contract basis. That post has already gone and been advertised. It was advertised, I think, a couple of weeks ago as the new Chief Director, Head of Monitoring and Evaluation. Next to him, Mr. Basson, is also a new appointment, but not replacing anybody. He is the director in monitoring and evaluation. It was a post that had not been filled previously. Mr. Nyawusa is being brought in as a deputy director responsible for communications in my office. I think the committee would know Letty. She is the head of our human resource development at the moment, and she's appeared before the committee before. And I think Mr. Mawate, everybody is familiar with as the parliamentary liaison officer in the Secretariat. So there have been some changes. The delegation has expanded, but there are also some new positions that have been filled. I'm not going to go through reading the document, Chair, because I think that hopefully people would have had some chance to go through it, and I think it's more important for us to hear what you have to say about our document as well. In terms of the mission and vision, I think we did change that mission and vision last year, and and it was presented to the Portfolio Committee last year. It hasn't changed since then. In terms of the background, I'm also not going to go into details. I think the Chair's already mentioned that we have tried to develop the document as closely as possible to the prescripts of Treasury, and to make sure that our document deals with the prescripts of Treasury. The numbers, etc., in the document are incredibly important, because with the Auditor General now evaluating performance, to be able for them to evaluate it based on numbers, even percentages, they've suggested we try and avoid that where possible, because it's difficult to measure in a percentage as opposed to numbers. So it might seem that the document contains a whole lot of numbers, but at the end of the day, that is one of the requirements of Treasury, is to start using actual numbered figures as opposed to percentages. Some areas we've had to use percentages because you need to be 100% compliant, but where possible we've tried to break it down into numbers. The one thing that we haven't done in this document, and it's because it's the first time that the Civilian Secretariat for Police has actually presented their APPs in this format, is we don't have the previous 3 years for those, because it's the first time we're presenting in this format. So in future going forward, we would have to produce the figures for those previous years. Obviously, this report has not been tabled. It has been approved by the Minister prior to submission, but it doesn't get tabled because we still remain a cost centre. Next year, however, this report would have to be tabled within the parliamentary timelines required. In terms of page 4 and new developments, I think I'm not going to go into detail about the new developments, because I think that the committee is well aware of the legislation and the reorganisation. Except with regard to the reorganisation, just to say, if you look in the annual performance plan, the deadline for implementation of that reorganised structure is June 2011. We are likely to introduce the structure earlier. The structure at the moment, the job evaluations for the reorganisation have been conducted by the DPSA. That the entire structure plus the job evaluations are with the DPSA's review committee. Once the committee has finalized that in the next couple of weeks, it will go to both the Minister of DPSA and our own Minister for sign-off before implementation. And you will then see when we come later that we have costed that new structure. And I'll talk about that a bit later under the budget developments. I think on page 5 of the press...
It says as if we're having different documents. It's not your fault, but we don't have that document that we are reading. We are trying to follow you, but it seems as if we have got different documents, but we are still looking at the same page and so and yours, but it seems as if we're totally different.
No, you can continue. Why?
The APPs and the strat plan were sent through, and then within an hour, this presentation was sent through on Monday. So I apologise if people don't have copies. It is up on the screen though, because they were all three documents were sent through on Monday. But they do speak. This document does speak to. What I've spoken about in terms of new developments is all there contained under the situational analysis and the organisational analysis. So it's just a summary of what is in the APPs. We've tried to keep this document as close to the APPs as possible. What we have done within the Secretariat is we have, in preparation for becoming a designated department, we have broken the Secretariat down into four distinct program areas. Those program areas are policy, research, and legislation, with the policy and research and legislation having chief directors both for policy and research, and going forward we'll have a chief director for legislation, monitoring and evaluation of SAPs, partnership management, and then administration, which includes your entire corporate services as well as the Office of the Secretary. So we've tried to break it into those four programs, and you will see in the APP document that that's how we've broken it down, and then sub-programs within that. In terms of some of the key areas of strategic focus for us in the 2011-2012, at a policy level, there are a number of key areas that we will be focusing on. The review of the White Paper for Safety and Security as a guiding document for future policy development and legislation, the review of the SAPS Act and regulations accompanying that SAPS Act, the review of policy linked to the regulation of the private security industry, which we are working jointly with CERA on, the finalisation of the Fire Control Act, amendments to the Fire Control Act and the regulations, and any policy areas as may be determined by the minister. And I think it would, if you go to the APPs, you'll see that both the first half of the year deals with the Firearms Control Act and the CERA Act, and then in the second half of the year we intend to bring the SAPS Act, which will be a major overhaul in the second half of the year. In terms of our strategic outcome goals, that are in the strategic plan. The first is effective and efficient governance and administration of the Civilian Secretariat for Police. And for us, it's crucially important that if the Civilian Secretariat for Police is going to be effective as an oversight body, then we need to be the kind of department, once we become a department, which actually very clearly is not having problems itself. It will be very difficult to be an oversight body, but then to be receiving qualified audits and at our own administration to be problematic. So that is an important goal for us. The second is quality, timeous, and evidence-based strategic research and policy advice to the Minister of Police, which speaks to our Policy Research and Legislation Unit, deepening the public participation in the fight against crime, which speaks to our partnership unit, and effective and efficient oversight of the South African police. In terms of the next slide, as we said, we've broken the Secretariat up into four programs, in preparation for becoming a designated department. Administration, which will, once we become a fully designated department, become corporate services, partnership, policy and legislation, and monitoring and evaluation. In terms of Program 1 administration, this program covers the Office of the Secretary, human resource development or management, supply chain management, finance and auxiliary services. And the overall purpose of the program is to ensure that the staff of the Civilian Secretariat are supported to cooperate in a conducive work environment and ensure improved service delivery. And then within that program, you will see, and this comes straight out of the APPs, that we have broken that down into sub-programs, which is the Office of the Secretary. This program will focus on both ensuring that there is proper performance management and adherence to certain parliamentary and treasury prescripts, for example, the facilitating strategic plans, APPs, and performance management. The second component of the Secretary of Police's office is deals with the alignment with the provinces, and that the Office of the Secretary of Police must take responsibility for ensuring that there is alignment with the provincial secretariat for police. The third area is support to the minister, including support with regard to advice on international obligations, and generally being able to support the minister at a number of different levels. And then the fourth area of the Secretary of Police's office is special projects as referred to the office by the minister. So there would be particular projects where the minister would refer them directly to the Secretary of Police to conduct in two particular areas, and which are over and above the work that is done by the monitoring and evaluation unit. Under the human resource development, I think that all the areas are spelt out quite clearly there for us. What we have been doing over the last period has been putting effective policy systems in place, making sure that we have all the correct policies in place, and so that what's happened in the past is, because the Secretariat has been a cost centre, a lot of those policies have been SAPS's policies. But we need to align those policies with the DPSA policies, because we actually don't fall under SAPS. We actually fall under the DPSA. In addition to that, there's a significant amount of energy within our human resource development is also going to be capacitating the structure and making sure that there is effective specialised training and induction for people that come into the Secretariat. Under supply chain management, this is an area where we are having to spend considerable energy. Again, because we were a cost centre, we have had to start and in the next year have to make sure we have set up effective supply chain management systems within the Civilian Secretariat for Police, so that by the time we become a designated department, those systems are all in place, making sure we have effective asset plans, asset management plans, risk management plans in place, supplier databases, making sure the integrity of our asset register is in place. And the same applies to the finance section. So what is going to happen and what we're starting to implement this year is making sure we're able to present monthly, quarterly and annual financial statements and figures, because up till now the Secretariat has not been required to do that. Now, we don't want to start that process next year and it suddenly hit us next year that now we have to produce for the Minister monthly statements and quarterly statements. We want to start that process now so that we get into that habit and it doesn't hit us in the face when we become a designated department. So issues of midterm budget reviews, all those sorts of practices we're going to be putting in place this year, regardless of us being still a cost centre until next year, so that we're able to deal with those processes before that. The budget for this program is then listed in the APPs, and a breakdown of that is listed on the presentation. Obviously, just one point to point out is the Office of the Secretary, because of the special projects, because of the having to take responsibility for the performance strategic plan, the alignment of the provinces, that is why that budget is at the level at which it is, and we'd be happy to explain that. In terms of Project 2, I'm just going to go through an introduction and then Mr. Seymour will spend 2 or 3 minutes just talking about that unit. The purpose of this program is to mobilize role players, stakeholders and other partners in the fight against crime, and we have broken this down into a number of different sub-programs: civil society partnerships, intergovernmental partnerships, and Mr. Zima will explain that, community outreach programs, community safety forums. We've identified that as a very separate, not falling into community outreach, because it is an incredibly important priority for government. It's one of the clear outcomes of the within the JCPS cluster, so we have identified it as a separate project. And then crime prevention, public-private partnerships with business, etc. I'm then going to just ask Mr. Zemo to spend 2 or 3 minutes talking about the partnership.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Just to emphasize some few aspects, in terms of community outreach, the major emphasis will be on developing guidelines for CPFs. And in terms of intergovernmental partnerships, we are going to focus on strengthening the coordination with provinces, cluster departments, the social development in some aspects, and in other aspects with regards to rural safety, the area of agriculture. With regards to public-private partnerships, we'll again strengthen our working relationship with business against crime, and as well as the project on small business robberies, as well as following up on the memo that has been signed between VAC as well as the SAPS. With regards to civil society partnerships, in the past few months we've been able to do some work with regards particularly with trade unions and agricultural societies like AgriSA and so on, and for the rest of the program we think hopefully by August we should have then dealt with political parties and other organizations that are not worker related, and the CSF that the Secretary has spoken about the policy rollout there. Thanks.
Okay, you'll see under the CSS we talk about the rollout to 10. The reason is it's 9 provinces plus the head office. So that's why we talk about 10. It might seem strange, but in terms of head office, because the CSS is an intergovernmental, we need to make sure that at a national level we have all those intergovernmental role players participating, so that's why it refers to 10. The same with the CPS we talk about in terms of our target 10, because it's 9 provinces plus the national approach to CPF. So that's just for point of clarity of why we refer to the number 10 in our APPs. In terms of the policy research and legislation, as I said earlier, we've broken this program down into 2 sub-programs: policy and research, which will be led by the policy and research directed as it is structured now. And then within the new organizational structure we have included, which we have not as yet filled because it's got to be approved and then advertised, is a specific legislative chief directorate. We've lumped the 2 together, although there will be 2 separate directorates within the program, because policy and research must inform how we approach legislation. So it would make sense for the 2 of them to be in the same program as opposed to breaking down the program. And then I'll just hand over to Mr. Antong too.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Members, as indicated, the program is divided into 2 sub-programs: policy and research, which focus to provide quality research and policy advice to the Secretariat and the Minister. Here there's 4 strategic objectives, which all link up with the purpose. The indicators in this regard is we're looking at the revised white paper, policy document on single police, as well as the Private PSIRA Act, as indicated by the Secretary. The second one is basically to conduct
high-quality evidence-based research programs on policing issues. There's specific focus areas, for instance, the research reports on SEPS training, an internal police survey that must be conducted, as well as other areas required by the minister. The third one, enhance research and policy development within the policing environment. Here we will continue engaging with our reference groups, as well as focusing on an integrated annual research program that we must produce and follow that. Then also, we have started with a process to institutionalize the resource center that will assist and act as an information hub to support all components. Also, at some stage we want to roll this up and duplicate it at provinces or assist provinces to bring it up. That will basically link as a point from where all information can be distributed or collated. The second sub-program is basically legislation, and that is to ensure that relevant legislation is developed and aligned in the policing environment. I think when the Secretary discussed the specific outcomes, there was specific reference to the review of the SEPS Act, the Firearms Control Amendment Act. We're going into the PSIRA Act that we are also working on. And then issues around the dangerous weapons. Then also the regulations as indicated in terms of the Firearms Control Act, Amendment Act, and the SUPS Act. And I think at this stage we also want to center to regulations under the new Civilian Secretariat for Police Act. The other one is just an estimated budget for the coming new financial year. Policy and Research Resource Center and legislation, and the total is appearing on the board. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just one or two comments on that. The first is that I think that we have said from the beginning that we need to develop the capacity internally within the Secretary to be able to carry out this area, both in terms of legislation and in terms of policy and research. I think that one of the things that we have done, however, is to say that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have been engaging in partnerships with academics and institutions, many of whom serve on our reference group. So if, for example, we look at the white paper, a lot of the work has already been done. What we are now trying to do is to pull that information together. And we have engaged people like the ISS, certain academics from University of Natal, University of Cape Town, even Mr. Kinnis, who used to be in our policy and research unit, is helping us with some of the research, but it's not contracted out. It's that we're working jointly with them in partnership with them. So some of the areas in the policy and research, we've already started work on it, but it has to be finalized within this financial year. The final areas is monitoring and evaluation, and I think I spoke about earlier that in about October this year, we basically restructured the area of monitoring and evaluation and really had to look at capacitating it, because this is essentially the engine room of the Secretariat. What comes out of our oversight will actually inform policy directions, etc., within the Secretariat. So we really had quite a weak capacity in that area, and we have capacitated this unit significantly, and I think that members of the Portfolio Committee may be aware we advertised a significant number of posts last year. In this regard, we felt that we couldn't wait for the structure to be, the demands on the Secretariat meant that we needed to start filling those posts. The posts that we did fill are not in contradiction with the organizational redesign that has been developed within the DPSA. They were already on our structure, but we knew that those posts were going to be in the new organizational design, so we advertised and filled those posts. We've broken this program up into three sub-programs: service delivery and performance auditing, policy compliance, and provincial coordination, and I'll ask the school chair to just take you briefly through that.
Thank you, Chair. The first program that I will talk to is service delivery and performance audit. The objective is to improve oversight, over the police within national and within national, provincial, and local spheres of government. Some of the indicators that have been that are key for this program is basically to review the strategic plans of the SAPS and to also look at how they're spending their budget. We also will be we have already started conducting police station visits, and from there we will be producing reports and looking at trends within the police stations, and we'll also be developing monitoring reports on how SAPS is handling complaints with regard to the presidential hotline, the IP recommendations, and also we'll be looking at how SAPS is implementing the 7-point plan that has been outlined in the CJS review report. And lastly, under this program, we'll be looking at specific SAPS programs that have been highlighted as key by the ministry, and we will be conducting evaluations on some of those projects. One of them is the management of firearms by the SAPS, and also one other key project that is coming out from the police station visits is problems around the SAP 13 stores. So we will give attention to that. The second sub-program is policy compliance. In this area, we will be looking at transformation issues and also deal with the training and recruitment program within the SAPS. We'll also be looking at compliance to legislation in terms of the DVA, the Child Justice Act, and Sexual Offences Act. And lastly, we will, through the partnerships that will be established by the unit, we will convene the MNE reference group and also be part of the gender DVA and CJA reference group. The last program, the objective is improved civilian oversight of police between the secretariat and provincial secretariat. This also talks to capacitating the entire MNE workforce within provinces and national department. Key indicators is the training program, a customized training program that will be delivered. It will be designed and delivered by the MNE team together with the MNE forum members. We'll be looking at officials trained, and we'll also develop a framework that will govern MNE activities within national and provincial secretariats. We are also going to be finalizing the development of the national monitoring tool, and we're working with CETA in digitizing the tool. The tool was revised and it has been piloted, and we managed to visit 20 police stations in the past months using the tool, and a report is being generated on that. And lastly, we will then convene a mini forums for the year. The next slide talks to the estimated budget for the entire program. Thank you, Chair.
Just two things on that. The one is both when it comes to partnerships and when it comes to MNE, those are crucially the programs that we have to align with the provinces. If you look at our partnership budget, it may seem more small, but a lot of the rollout is going to happen at a provincial level. So if one talks about CSS, for example, we would develop the national approach and the training, but the actual rollout will be at the provinces. And those provinces, most of them have very large budgets
in that partnership area. And the same applies to the monitoring and evaluation, is that we will be working with the provinces. And already this, we have agreed on an approved alignment, which we've submitted to Treasury for both the partnership unit and the monitoring and evaluation unit as sector APPs, which includes ourselves and the provinces in terms of that alignment. Again, some of the work in the ME unit has already been done, as Millicent said, in terms of the framework that has been agreed to with the provinces. I just wanted to raise one thing, which is, I think, quite an exciting development, which affects both ME and partnership, is that we have been engaged with the WITS Business School Postgraduate Department. They were wanting to engage in a partnership with SAPS, with the department. And what we had suggested to them is, because often those partnerships with the police take a long time before they see fruition, and we felt that there were certain quick win things that we could engage with the WITS Postgraduate School. And two areas are civilian oversight. We felt that we needed to start professionalizing civilian oversight. If you look at the provinces and even ourselves, people come in and they may be ME experts in other government departments. Oversight is something very different to normal ME. And so what we are developing with the WITS Postgraduate School is a specific civilian oversight training, which will be done for the provinces and ourselves, and where people will actually get a CETA-accredited certificate, diploma, or degree, depending on how far that course is taken, from WITS. And we're doing the same with CSFs. We're developing a specialized CSF course so that all the different intergovernmental departments that participate at a national and at a provincial level in the rollout of CSFs will have to undergo this course. But they will basically receive an accredited certificate from WITS, which is CETA recognized, be it a diploma or whatever. And those are two of the immediate things. We've also suggested to the ICD that they also look at a similar agreement with WITS around civilian investigations, because it's different to police investigations, that those could be three immediate courses. And in fact, we are busy designing the course content with the ME Forum for that and the partnership unit for those two different areas, and it is hopefully going to Senate in the May, to the WITS Senate in May, so it becomes an approved course in that area. Just to then look at the next area, which is our budget. And as I mentioned earlier, that our budget is going to increase significantly this year. This is both in terms of us being able to fulfill our mandate in terms of the legislative requirements that the new legislation will bring in, but also in terms of us becoming a designated department. The biggest area of spend, I've already mentioned that a lot of the partnership and monitoring and evaluation budget needs to be seen in the context of the provincial budgets that are available for that, and us being able to work with the provinces in utilizing those budgets. But the biggest cost is going to be for us in the reorganization and the changes in staffing in the secretariat and the staff structure. So our human resource development budget is going to be, it's going to escalate in 2010-11 to 27 million from 14 million, and then in 2012-13 to 37 million. What we will be doing and what we've agreed to with the DPSA is we'll be phasing in this new structure. So we're not going to hit it with a big bang and advertise every single post. We're going to be advertising the critical posts in the first year, and then so for example, to appoint a CFO now, when we only become a cost center next year, the person would not be performing their task. So what will happen is that person will be appointed either in December, January next year, so that by the time March comes, the person would have been in the post, but they won't be appointed immediately, because they're actually, we're still a cost center. So that's how we are beginning to phase that in, and that's why the change from 2010-2011, it jumps from 27 to 37 million. But ultimately, we've costed the structure with DPSA, and by 2013, our staff
establishment costs and our human resource development costs are going to be $37 million, which is a significant jump. And that then accounts for the total budget for the Civilian Secretariat for Police this year was just over $25 million. Now, the Portfolio Committee will remember that when we presented it to you last year, we presented the figure of $21 million. SACS gave us an additional $4 million for projects that we needed to undertake. $1 million was for the victim survey, which we actually haven't utilized because at that point we thought the Secretariat was going to be running the victim survey. After negotiations with Stats SA, Stats SA are now running that survey and they didn't require that. We offered to them pay that $1 million over to Stats SA and they said no, they've got sufficient funding for it. And the other was for the database, which has ended up going to cost us a lot less than $3 million because CETA is going to develop it themselves for us. It's not going to go out on tender and it's going to cost $1.7 million. So that would account for the difference between the $21 million we asked for last year when we came to you and the $25 million we were allocated. It was those two projects. However, in this next year, we are asking for $41.5 million, with the bulk of that being on staff, on human resource development. And then you will see the breakdown on the next page is the difference is the operational expenditure and the human resource development expenditure. Just finally then, our key challenges and risks. We have tried to look at what are our key challenges and risks and what are we doing to address these key challenges and risks. Obviously the current HR capacity has impacted negatively on the Secretariat being able to carry out its mandate, not just in terms of us becoming a designated department, but until recently, for example, the monitoring and evaluation unit was like 3 or 4 people trying to do that whole work. And in order to meet the reorganization of the Secretariat and the phasing in of that reorganization should mitigate against this factor. And as we said, we set the deadline for that being approved for implementation June. We suspect that given our discussions with DPSA and the fact that it has gone through the review committee pretty easily at this point, we suspect that if we can get the minister to sign off on it in April, we may be able to start implementing in May as opposed to June. The budget for the Secretariat is run as a cost center. Our concern around this as a risk factor is that there are significant issues in becoming a designated department, both at the level of being able to have the capacity, and what we mentioned earlier was that if the Secretariat is going to perform its role, it needs to be exemplary in this area. So we're going to need to really make sure that by the end of next year we have the capacity to become a designated department, but also in terms of being a designated department, one of the areas of concern is that we don't want to suddenly have to develop a whole new infrastructure. So in terms of looking at offices, IT systems, a whole range of infrastructure which exists within SACS, if we were to recreate that, we would be landing up with a massive, massive budget. We've had discussions with Treasury and the DPSA around this area, and we've also had some discussions with some departments that were split, for example, education, where education became two departments. And what we are looking at doing is entering into shared service agreements with SAPS. So there would be certain areas where we share services with SAPS. That's what other departments that were split when the new administration came into existence, they didn't start off with a big bang having everything for themselves. They entered into shared service agreements where they shared certain services. And that's one area that we are hoping by, and you'll see in our APPs, we're hoping to finalize those shared service agreements by mid-year this year, by June 2011, so that we're able to implement them in the 6 months before we become a designated department. Office space and infrastructure and IT being outdated has impacted negatively on the Secretariat. In particular, the office space, which we're trying to employ new staff, and we have very limited at the moment. We're having to get people to share offices. But we've also developed an approach going forward to say we know that we have submitted a needs list to the police in terms of our needs with the
possibility of an office move from the head office, but we also are developing an open plan type arrangement so that we don't find that everybody's got an office and then in 6 months' time suddenly we've got new people coming in and they don't have offices. So we've developed a more kind of a flexible approach to our needs in this regard, which will allow us to grow if we require to grow and not limit us the way we're currently limited. And then I think that the new legislation places significant risk for us. We've been having discussions in the civilian secretariat that, and particularly people, some of the new people we've brought in, we've poached from other government departments and brought them in, is one of our biggest risks is going to be meeting those legislative obligations, and in particular becoming a designated department. And that's one of the things that we are trying to mitigate through the organisational redesign as well as through the different measures that we are putting in place this year. We don't want to suddenly come into 2012, 2013 and try and do everything at once in that year. We have to start, and hence that's why we've even tried to develop our APPs in this format, so we get used to how we should be operating and make sure that we are operating like that going forward. And that's it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Secretary, I will allow members to ask questions and then we will let the Secretariat office or delegation to respond to those questions. Honorable Sate, Honorable NG, Honorable Dovu, Honorable Anil. Annelise, in that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question is actually in the slide where they're talking of the indicators per program. That's slide number. I don't have number, but basically it's with regard to 024, slide number 24. Basically, it's with regard to visiting of police stations. I was not quite clear as to whether are you saying that you're still going to visit these police stations or you have visited these police stations. So I just want to find out if you have visited and then if the report after visiting the police stations, you're going to submit it to the subs, because we've been complaining about several police stations, especially in the rural areas, where actually the conditions in those police stations are not good. So I just wanted also to find out with regard to that. And also another one is with regard to resource allocation. So I also want to find out more from your side with regard to this, if ever you're going to do it in the subs, to check as to whether resources are being adequately allocated. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on provincial secretariat. How far are you with provincial secretariat? As far as I remember, I think there was a time you spoke of having two. So I just want to check how far are you. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you very much for the presentation. I want to ask the question on slide number 21. You talk about review of SAPS Act, Firearms Control Amendment Act, but you don't tell us the time frame or the timeline about that. Maybe if you can do that, it will assist us to understand exactly what we're talking about. And the second question which I want to raise, Chairperson, when it comes to slide number 24, resource allocation, what do we do if the resource allocation is not the way what you wanted from the police? What do you do? What do you do with that? How do you act on that if the resource allocation, because we are monitoring what the police should do, or maybe the what the police should implement. What do you do if the resource allocation is not what you want at the end of the day? The last question, Chairperson, is slide number 28. Can the director explain to me? It seems as if maybe I'm getting lost. The first paragraph is saying something else. The second paragraph is saying something else. It's got 25 million. I don't talk about the four million that you got from somewhere. Talk about 21 million. But now, if you go back to the first paragraph, it's a totally different story. That's where I'm getting lost. What are you really talking about? Where are we on that financially? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I just want to know whether Ayanda has arranged dinner, because my questions are many. Then I presume the secretariat will pay for dinner.
For dinner.
Do they have the money? I don't think. They just told us they got a million that statistics didn't want. So, no, Chairperson, I seriously have quite a number of questions. I mean, while appreciating what we've got, and I think it is a good document, I do have some concerns that I think, I hope are legitimate concerns. I believe they are. Chairperson, I think what is important is we've passed this legislation, we're waiting for the legislation to be enacted. But with that comes a different role for the Secretariat. And that is where my concern comes in as well. And I'm referring more to the Office of the Secretary than I'm referring to the other units, although I'll come to the units. In my mind, the Secretariat becomes an important role player for civilian oversight. And they should start playing that role, as in of yesterday already. Because even though the Act is not in place yet, the what is in place within the SAFS Act enables them to do so, and I think it's time for them to start asserting that role. I want to mention one example. I saw that there were people here from monitoring and evaluation yesterday with the budget hearing. In my mind, the civilian secretariat during the budget process of SAPS should play an integral part in the process. First instance, in terms of also making a presentation to this committee like SPOKLU, SAPU, Treasury, etc. Because budget is policy in action. And if this unit is, if this secretariat is supposed to be monitoring that, then they cannot excuse themselves from the budget process. Like the AG, like the Treasury, like PopCrew, like SAPU, like ISS, all those guys, but more importantly so. And I think the secretariat did itself no favor by not being present in senior capacity during this budget process. I think it's time, even if it's just at times as spectators, but it's time that they be here to listen to what SAPS are saying to us as well. Because how do you tell minister where the policy are followed if you can't put the spending with the policy? And you shouldn't do that secondhand. You shouldn't do it through us. You shouldn't do it through our report. You should be here to listen to what they say. Because I can tell you now that we had long discussions today, even in terms of the way that they're determining targets. And we are not very happy with that. I'm also... that for me, there's a bit of a shortcoming in terms of your proactive role in terms of oversight, if I can put it that way. With other words, not waiting for minister or MECs or whoever else to ask you to do oversight on something. So that's the one thing. And I think the station visits and the Section 13 stalls and those things will contribute to a proactive oversight. But I still believe I almost want to say on a higher level, if you understand what I'm saying, that oversight for me is not there. And somehow I think that oversight needs to come into practice. I think it also talks about a divorce between subs and the secretariat. Subs and the secretariat. I think there's a too close relationship at this time. It's there because of the structural way that it's there, but it should not be that. We expect it to be a bit more uncomfortable than what it is currently. Not tension. I'm talking about creative tension. I'm actually quite serious because budget in the end for me is policy in action. Annual performance plan, I expect the secretariat not to wait for us to call them to say what is your feeling, but for them to contact the chairperson through the office of the secretary and say, well, we want to make a presentation on SAP's annual performance and what we feel is the shortcomings, etc., etc. We want to make a presentation in terms of how we felt they've dealt with the recommendations by IPED, example. The second issue that I want to come to is the issue of your performance measurements. And I think they're fine. And they according to what Treasury require. But I think what we do need as well is that it doesn't become, and we said that to the ICD as well, it doesn't become a numbers game only. Because it's easy enough to have four meetings with a CSF, but what is the outcome that you want from that? And I think that we need to in future programs, in future annual performance plans, we need to get as well. What is your expected outcome? And that goes for monitoring and evaluation. It goes for policy. Policy is a bit more easy because you've got a project in the end. But for partnerships and monitoring and evaluation, if it is for monitoring and evaluation, is that we want to make sure that the outcome is to change the national instructions around sub 13 stores, argument's sake, then we need to know that because we need to be able to measure the outcome of the programs that you've implemented. Currently, it's going to be very difficult for us to measure you other than did you have your four meetings. You understand what I'm saying around that? The value of the product, that's basically what I'm trying to get to. The planning for another thing that I'm missing, unless I didn't listen properly, which is also possible at this time of the day, is that I'm a bit worried about, and we've raised it with ICD as well, about your transitional arrangements in terms of DVA, the responsibilities that you are going to take over from ICD around that, and also CPS. I don't see anything speaking to those. And the possibility is there that the president might sign within a week, within 2 days, within 10 hours, as far as we know. Then also, can we get an indication whether you've got any role to play or whether you see any role for yourself to play in terms of national instructions and standing orders. And asking this question because we know from past experience that you've been involved in some of this, for instance, the Child Justice Act. But again, that was a reactive involvement. It's after the crisis the Secretariat got involved. Proactively do we see, for instance, the fingerprint legislation have been passed. There are certain requirements that must be in place within 6 months. I think that 6 months is coming up if it's not past the 6 months already, where they had to have certain regulations coming to us, and they don't have those. So what do you see any role for yourself in terms of that? Then lastly, just a remark from my side, Jefferson, is I heard the Secretary saying that the CFO, they're only going to appoint by January, February, and December, January, why I can appreciate why you're going to do that, I would urge you to do it earlier, so that that person can get involved in your budgeting process when you start going to Treasury this year. And I think that's June, July, if I'm not mistaken, that process starts already. I think you've got the unique opportunity to have a CFO that can be part of the process rather than a CFO that's presented with a budget. And should be part of that process. And I mean, what we're basically saying to you is, while we accept that that person won't be doing their full capacity of work, that person's got an important role to play even in your budgeting process. And maybe you should reconsider the December, January to a more mid-year approach. But, Jay, I think after I've been strict, let me also say that I appreciate the effort that has gone into this. We know that we've literally given them since Friday afternoon, after we finished our strategy plan and we heard about the changes in the budget debate, etc. But also the fact that it actually makes sense, and that we can actually follow it. We don't have to fight about the format or the lack of information. So if I can add my voice to those who have raised those.
Thank you very much. When you talk about divorces, you know, we open our eyes because there have been quite a number of divorces these days. And started with the ANC, IFP followed. I don't know who's next.
It started with Co.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Secretary, I'm just checking your annual performance plan. You are saying on page 23 of your APP, you are saying first quarter we must expect white paper, and first quarter ends April, May, June, and you are saying you shall have finalized a policy document on single police service. You are saying third quarter, which is December, you are saying you shall have finalized policy document on private security. Are you talking about the policy, or are you talking about the bill itself, the finalized policy document on establishment of CSF, a finalized policy on police station, okay, that one. I'm just checking, because these, they are talking to our programs as well. And in this document that you presented, I think the question related to Honorable Nzovu, you've indicated dangerous weapons, SIRA, Firearms Control Amendment, Review, Subs Act, are all these for this year? I'm just checking. And yeah, and secondly, I just want to be sure, what is your budget? Is it 41.55 or anything else? 69, what is your budget? I'm asking that because I think there is a table that shows an allocation for operational expenditure, which is 13.9 million, I think. And if you add it to personal expenditures, the total is 41. But it could actually mean that you for personal expenditures allocated 27.5 million, which will all give you 69. So I just want to be sure of those figures as to what exactly is your budget. And secondly, when you appeared before the portfolio committee last year, you indicated that there were seeing some weaknesses in your financial management areas, and I just want to check as to what steps have you taken now up to now. I understand the fact that you might be appointing the CFO in the near future, but up to now, what have you done to strengthen those? And with that ever steps that you've put in place, what is the outcome of that? Has there been improvement? Those would be the few questions that I have. And yeah, I would allow you to respond to the questions.
Okay, can I respond? Okay. I'm going to leave the police station issue to Millicent to respond from M&E, because we have done some this year, but the targets we set are for next year, but she can explain that. So we've already started doing visits this year, but the targets we set are for the next year. And also in terms of the resource allocation. I think one of the things that I want to raise around this, though, is that you talk about a close relationship. I think we've had serious, serious problems with the assertion of the new secretariat in our relationship with SAPS. And I think the tension hasn't been creative. It's been really very serious. In fact, I think we were last week just about serving divorce papers on each other. I think that what we have tried to do now is to say, and this relates to the question about what do you do when you come up with information about the resource allocations, etc. Obviously, on the one hand, we report to both the Minister and Parliament, and those reports will be available to both Parliament and the Minister. But one of the things we discussed last night, there was a meeting last night, in fact, to discuss the role of the Secretariat and the role of SAPS, and to clarify between SAPS management and ourselves as to what the different roles were, and precisely some of the issues that have been raised by the Honourable Member Van Beek around those areas. And one of the things we spoke about there was the need to establish a forum which meets on a regular basis, if it meets quarterly, if it meets every 2 months, between the Secretariat and the police, where we are able to say to them, these are the issues that have picked up, what are you going to do about these issues? And then monitor what happens to those issues once we have picked them up. Because it's fine, we can bring them to the portfolio kit, we can bring them to the minister. And in some cases where we pick up these issues and nothing is done about it, we may have to take that route, even if we've discussed the issue with SAP, so that an instruction goes out about it. But there are a number of smaller issues. I mean, just take, for example, the storage of vehicles in SAPS. Do we have to take each and every issue to the portfolio committee or to the minister, or can we have a forum where we say to them, these are some of our concerns, these are some of the issues we've picked up, now we'd like to hear from you, what are you going to do about those issues, and then monitor that implementation? And that was one of the things that we discussed in the meeting that was held last night, because we were virtually on divorce terms, and we were trying to work out how we could deal with these tensions. We acknowledged on both sides that those tensions are going to be there. They're going to be there given the Secretariat's role. The question is, how do you make them, what Honourable Member Van Dijk said, creative tensions? Sorry? Van Dijk, sorry. Okay. In terms of the provincial secretariats, we have been basically... They haven't been instituted as yet in any other than those two provinces. However, we have been involved in strategic planning sessions with each and every one of the provinces. And we're looking at the costing and the budgeting with those provinces of those secretariats. So our sense is that, with the possible exception of one province, which all the provinces are actually in their strategic planning sessions planning for that implementation and are involved in discussions. We have been asked to engage National Treasury to make sure that National Treasury send the instruction down to provincial treasuries to ensure that they, when they present their budgets in August, that this is taken into account in their budgets. So although we're still looking at two, others haven't set up, they are very much in the planning stages. I can say that at least four of the provinces have included this in their strategic planning. We've been asked to give input on it. There's some provinces that might have supported the bill, but they're going to have to be pushed into it just because of their current resource allocations or the priority given to safety and security. But we can say that at least four of the provinces are seriously moving ahead with this and have been coming back to us. But at the HRD's forum meeting, no province has told us that they're not going to go for it. They've all spoken about how they are incorporating it into their plans, and some of them we have engaged with. For example, last week we were in a team went into KZN to their strategic planning session to specifically talk with them, not only them, but also with the MEC about the structure going forward. We've had discussions with the Northern Cape, and the Northern Cape have already started to include it. So there are provinces that are definitely planning for this. Some provinces are a bit slower than others around this area. In terms of the timelines for legislation, I think that what we probably should do is to submit to the Portfolio Committee the legislative program. The timelines may have to, the only area of timeline that may have to change is the private security one, which we need to engage with yourselves about it, because the idea is that the white paper should take precedence over the private security, that more important is getting the white paper. That white paper should not only inform the SAPS Act, but the entire policing environment, which includes private security. So we may have to delay the private security, which is why we've listed it later on in the year, because of the need to bring in the white paper. Just to give you the concrete, the Dangerous Weapons Act has been done. It's been done jointly with Justice, and it's now in my office for final going through before it goes to the Minister. That Dangerous Weapons Act will have to be debated by the two committees because it's a joint bill with Justice. We have
you
asked
involve IFP for that Dangerous Weapons Act.
It's actually not related. It's related to a constitutional court judgment around the dangerous weapons. There was a constitutional court judgment, and we had to bring the legislation in line with that constitutional judgment. And that's really what, it's not a completely new or hugely problematic. It's really bringing what existed in line with the constitutional court judgment. And that, we are asking permission for it to be published for comment now. So I would think that by the next, it will probably go to Cabinet in May. I would think by June it would be ready to come to the Portfolio Committee. The urgency in bringing it immediately was that Constitutional Court judgment and the fact that our legislation was out of line with the Constitutional Court judgment. With regard to the Firearms Control Amendment Act, just to maybe explain to the Portfolio Committee what happened was that for those that were not part of that Portfolio Committee, that Firearms Control Amendment Act was actually passed by Parliament. It was signed off by the President but never enacted. There were some quite serious drafting problems that were picked up when we were trying to do the regulations by our legal person that was assisting us with regulations. Certain things had been amended, and I think because there had been so many different versions, some things that were amended were not carried all the way through. So the Act has to come back to Cabinet and the Portfolio Committee. We can't change it because it's been signed off by the President. But what we've also done is since the firearms assessment of the Central Firearms Registry, we've also picked up other issues that we would like to include in that Act. There's some areas, for example, the Act, the Principal Act, not the Amendment Act, is talks about self-defense and leaves it quite open to the discretion of SAPS around what self-defense means. SAPS then comes up with a long list of what self-defense doesn't mean. We want to use this amendment thing to actually make sure that
We don't have to include it in the Act, but at least regulations must be passed on how a person applies for self-defense. There are certain things that we would like to change in the Amendment Act, which are not major changes, but which would leave less discretion to the department in terms of how they implement the Act. So those changes we are hoping to... the Firearms Control Amendment Act is quite urgent because there are the problems within the Central Firearms Registry and the way things are being administered. We are hoping, we have a workshop, not this week, next week, Friday, with a number of different stakeholders around the Act, and we are hoping that within the next month we would have been able to finalise, because we're not working from a completely new, we're working from the Amendment Act that was signed and just changing stuff here and there. So we are hoping that by the end of April that would be ready to go to Cabinet, that Amendment Act. With the White Paper, and I hear what the Chairperson is saying about is it ambitious, etc. We have been given very strict instructions that that White Paper, the draft, must be finalised by the end of May. We've done quite a lot of work on it. A lot of work has already happened on that. So some of that work just means we need to start packaging it and putting it together. So if it is ready, if the final draft is ready by May, it would probably come here in June, July, after it had been to Cabinet. So probably more likely July. The SAFS Amendment Act, we've been instructed by the Minister that we have to introduce that Act before the end of the year. It's a non-negotiable on the part of the Minister, because we are already picking up problems. I mean, last week we had a problem that we were dealing with the Minister and looking at the Act. And it talks about a section 217 of the Constitution. And when you look at 217, it's actually talking to traditional leaders. And that's because the Act still speaks to the interim constitution and sections of the interim constitution. So there are very serious implications in not doing that Act. Our view is that if we can come up with a very good, solid white paper, that white paper should inform how the review of the SAPS Act, because that should be the policy basis for the review of the SAPS Act. So the SAPS Act, we have informed Parliament, and I will send the Chairperson the what we sent to the Leader of Government Business in terms of the timelines. And we've said that that will come in the last session of this year to Parliament. So the only area where we may have to change is that private security, because of the white paper, and replace it with the white paper. I know the Minister is very keen that we push that through as quickly as possible, but we may have to look at that in the last session, and then you decide whether the Portfolio Committee decide whether to debate it this year or next year. So that's where we're standing on the legislation. In terms of the budget and the question asked by Honourable Member Nhlawo and by the Chairperson, I think the first paragraph of that budget refers strictly to the personnel budget. So the paragraph that talks about 27 million and 14 million specifically talks about personnel. So that is our personnel increase. So we've increased from 14 million to 27 million. The second bullet point on question 28, where we talk about from 25 to 41, is the overall budget, including our operational budget. So if you look at the next page, we have a personnel and training budget of 27.5 million, and we have an operational expenditure of 13,999,000, with the total amount being 41. So that's how. So the first bullet point refers specifically to personnel, and we broke it down like that so that people could see where the big jump is. It's in the personnel. It's in our capacity and the reorganisation of the Secretariat. So I hope that clarifies that. I think on the issue of that was raised by Honourable Member Van Faak on the different roles with regard to the Secretariat, I think that we have in fact been having that discussion ourselves in the Secretariat, and saying that sometimes we get involved in helping resolve the problems in SAPS once we've identified those problems, and that's actually not our role. We can't be both a player and a referee in the process. So if you take, for example, the Central Firearms Registry and us being on the steering committee that implements,
This, it's exceptional in the instance of the Central Firearms Registry because the situation was so bad that the minister asked us to become part. But in essence, the Secretariat's role going forward should be to monitor how SAPs then implement. So I think we do need to clarify the difference between those roles. And in fact, it was a discussion that we had as part of that meeting that I was speaking about last night between the National Commissioner's Office and ourselves about the different roles and responsibilities. I think on the issue of the budget and in fact I think it was raised by our MNE unit this morning with myself that actually they should have somebody at these meetings. So the point is noted that is made about sitting in on the budget meetings, and I think it was raised by the MNE unit themselves this morning when we had a meeting here in Cape Town. With regard to assessing SAPS's budget, I think that if you look at our APPs, it's there. I think what we haven't had up till now is the capacity to be able to do that. So that is it certainly is in one of the APPs, and I think Melissa can talk to it, that we will be assessing SAPS's budget biannually. But we have to develop the capacity to do that, both at the level of looking at the priority policies, but also what we're hoping with beefing up our financial section, that financial section would also help us understand SAPS's budget. Because if you look at the monthly reports that come, they're not really user-friendly. Already we have started to engage with the AG about warning lights in terms of where things are going with SAPS. But I think that in terms of engaging with the Portfolio Committee, when it comes to the APPs and our comments on the APPs, I think we need to... I note what the Honourable Member Van Wyk is saying, but at the same time, one of the things we also need to give the Minister input before it even comes here on those APPs. Not just the Portfolio Committee, but before the Minister signs off on those APPs, he should have our input on those APPs, and so that it isn't just a matter of dealing with it at the Portfolio Committee, but also dealing with it at the level of the Minister. In terms of the proactive role, again...
Can I just follow up on that? I think the Secretary is still missing the point that I'm making here. Yes, it's good enough to, it's good and well to have monitoring and evaluation here. It's policy. Budget is policy. And it's policy in action. And you should actually have your policy people here, if not yourself. And it's not about the rand and cent and the monthly warning lights, etc. It's about the trend, how they're spending. It's about the fact that they take 100 million from visible policing, which is supposed to be the strategy around which they do policing. It's about the non-implementation of sector policing because of the fact that they're not spending the money there. So I think, yes, monitoring and evaluation, fine, but there's for me a bigger issue. And that's why I'm raising the point. It's not only about monitoring and evaluation. It's about making sure that the policy is actually implemented.
Just to respond to that, it's the monitoring and evaluation unit that looks at where the policy is being implemented, not the policy unit. The policy unit develops that policy, and the monitoring and evaluation unit informs that policy. So from our perspective, we felt that it would be better. And I don't think we're talking just about the rands and cents. I think we're talking about looking at broadly. I mean, even when we developed these APPs, we went back to the portfolio's budget review report. And it's absolutely true what the member says, that somebody must be here. But our policy unit develops policy and doesn't monitor it. It's a monitoring and evaluation unit. And if you look at the area of compliance with policy, that's one of the indicators. So I think we can discuss whether there needs to be a policy person here. But essentially, it's our monitoring and evaluation unit that does the monitoring of whether policy is being implemented or not. And based on that, whether further policy needs to then be implemented, which gets referred. So we can discuss it, but I think that's how we've kind of structured it up till now. In terms of the proactive role with M&E and special projects, I think that That's absolutely 100% right. I mean, one of the reasons, for example, that we said special projects should rest in the Secretary's office is that ME need a program that is ongoing, that isn't constantly interrupted by being asked, okay, now you must look at this issue as an urgent issue. They need to be able to be proactive and say at the beginning of the year, these are some of the priority areas that we're going to be investigating, SAPS, 13 stores, etc. And I think a number of those areas, if we... We've actually tried to look at what has come up in Parliament around those areas. Going forward, we will need to also be more proactive ourselves in identifying those areas. In terms of the performance measures and the numbers, etc., absolutely, I think it's an ongoing problem is identifying what the outcome is. And when we first looked at the performance measures, a lot of them were how many meetings we were going to have. And we tried to, where possible, change them. So, for example, it's not how many meetings we have with CPF, but it's that we actually develop a proper guideline based on those meetings and then roll out that guideline. So I think that we may need to still look at that a bit further, but we tried to not make our APPs based on just meetings and the number of meetings that we hold, but what is the outcome of those meetings and the value product. Obviously, the portfolio committee and the minister would have to assess whether, in fact, if we do come up with a policy document, that the quality of that policy document is effective. But I think that what we have to constantly do is to look at how we require to give numbers so that the Auditor General can monitor performance, but how do we not fall into just playing the numbers game? And it was one of the final things that we worked on Friday, was trying to make sure that where possible we had not just included number of meetings, but looked at saying that the result is not the number of meetings, but, for example, having a revised CPF policy at the end of it. But there may still need to be more work. The point is made. In terms of the transitional arrangements, we have already started working on those transitional arrangements. The CPF issue, the guidelines that are mentioned here speak to that, because I think when we passed that bill, we said to the portfolio committee that we don't want to be too specific on the CPS. We'll do that in regulations because we're not yet 100% sure what our role is and what SAPS's role, because SAPS will not have no role in CPS, but their role may be very different. So I think that those guidelines that we refer to in the APPs is part of that process of working out what comes to us, etc. But Mr. Zemel can add. And in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, I think Melissa can also add here, but we have already established, if you look here, we talk about the reference groups that are being established, not only in terms of under MNE, we've established a specific gender violence reference group, etc. And Melissa can talk to the fact that we have established a task team between ourselves and the ICD to actually begin to look at how do we hand that process, how do we hand that process over. Our role in terms of national instructions, I think that is something which to be honest with you, we probably need to go back and rework and relook at what exactly is our role around national instructions. I think the first point is looking at what is a national instruction, what is a policy. Because if one looks at, for example, the reservists, SAPS are treating it as a national instruction, but in actual fact it's a policy shift and it has to be approved by the minister. So I think one of the first steps is looking at what are national instructions and what are policy. And then we will, but I'm not sure that maybe Melissa can talk about that, but I think, Mr. Ontong, but I think it's an area that we need to go back and think about more. I think the point about the CFO, I think we note that point, and yeah, that has been raised by Ms. Van Wyk. I think I've dealt with the white paper just on the single police service. The draft policy document was finalised at the end of last year. It's actually with the minister because what we had done with that document is we had provided different areas where where the minister had to, as the executive authority, make decisions on before we could take that further. But the single police document, the policy has to be approved because it's got to go into the white paper. Essentially, it won't be a single document, a standalone document. It will be incorporated into our approach to the white paper, with the single police document becoming the backup document if people need more information, and then subsequently into the review of the SAPS Act, because that's where the provision for the Metro Police is made. So that's where it's at in terms of the single police. I think I've spoken about the private security. The CSF, Mr. Zemo, can comment on, but the policy has been, the draft policy has basically gone through the JCPS cluster. There were some comments that we are incorporating. Mr. Anton can just say where that process is, and Mr. Zemo, but it's virtually almost finalized for rollout and implementation, which is why in our APPs we don't refer so much to the policy, but the rollout of that policy. In terms of strengthening the financial management system, Mr. Thurman can talk a bit about what measures we have put in place. We've put in place monthly reporting systems, etc. I think in terms of capacitating that financial section, it's been very difficult to do that without the organizational structure being approved, because if one looks at the existing establishment of the Secretariat, the financial posts that we would advertise if we were to use that existing structure would be at a very low level. So there's no point in employing people at a low level, and then the new organizational structure comes in and that person should be at a different level. So for that reason, we haven't employed many people. I think we've employed two people. We've advertised for two positions in finance, but we haven't employed all the people on our current establishment because we want that reorganized structure to be approved and signed off by the minister so that we employ the financial people at the right level and not at the current organizational structure level that we have. But Mr. Zerman can talk about some of the measures we've put in place. We've developed the asset register. We have monthly reporting formats that we have started to do. And Mr. Thurman can just talk a bit more about those things. So maybe Mr. Antong and Mr. Thurman.
With regard to police station visits, if you can refer to page 30 of the APP, it clearly states the target for the year, which is 100 for this current financial year. The 20 that I was referring to is police station visits that have been conducted in the past month, and we are busy analyzing the trends and drafting the report in that regard. But also, I need to mention that the visits are guided by information that is coming from the planned visits, are guided by information that is coming from the provinces as to which police stations are problematic, which police stations have not been visited by the portfolio committee, for instance, which police stations that are lacking resources seriously and to such an extent that they are unable to perform their duties. So the list that we have compiled is based on that, and also the minister recently mentioned that we should ensure that we visit stations that haven't been visited before. So that comprises the list that we have developed. In terms of resource allocation, as we are conducting these visits, we have police officers have been complaining, and we've also observed that there is a problem in terms of resource allocation. For instance, vehicles, where you find that there are no vehicles at a police station. And that is why we felt that we needed to elevate this area so that we do a thorough assessment. And this is done through our monitoring tool, and we will then come up with findings and make recommendations to the minister. And also under that program, we'll also be looking at the uptake of recommendations that we have made as to whether are they being implemented or not. Now, if these, the question was, if what happens if these resources are not basically achieving what they're supposed to achieve, that will also be, you know, contained in the recommendations that we will be coming up with as the MNE team.
Chairperson, I just want to do a follow-up on this one, if you excuse me, Chairperson. You know why I tend to support Ms. Van Wyk on the Secretariat to be present when we're talking to the budget of the police? It's because of this resource allocation. Because it seems as if we are in different parts. We are now talking to the Secretariat. We have been fighting with the department about the resource allocation. They are telling us about the contracts. They are telling us about the vehicles. And we are getting something else now. That is why I said that the problem that there is no linkage. You see, there is a gap in between. Only to find that at the end of the day, when she gets the reports, it won't speak to the department per se. And department, in the meantime, will come to us and say that we are trying to get out of the contract, we are trying to do that, and so on and so forth. And she will come with another report of saying, they are not implementing this thing. And then we are, therefore, in between. We don't understand where we are. That's where I tend to say, maybe that's where the linkage should be. That we have to consolidate our inputs to make sure that when we're talking about this thing, we're not fighting each other, but we're doing let's coordinate it properly so that we know exactly what we're talking about. Because the department tell us something else. You come up with something else because you have already monitored and you have got you know what we're talking about. But the department tell us totally different thing, and we are saying totally different thing. Then we come to the three-level thing. This is, I don't talk about the board built down which three-level parts. No, I'm talking about three positions. You come with your position, the department comes with their position, we come with our position. And we don't know at the end of the day, it seems as if we are fighting each other instead of coordinating what we want to do. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you.
The other area was with regard to national instructions. I think we take that point. We will look into that. And also regarding the ICD transition, we have set up a task team, as the Secretary has indicated. We are actually meeting tomorrow to discuss basically how we are going to manage the transition period between ourselves and the ICD. And that task team was formed through a workshop that was held with the ICD, where we discussed progress that has been made and looked at DVA issues and audits, and also challenges that were faced by the provinces. And out of that workshop, we then set up a smaller task team that will basically look at all the issues as we're preparing to take over from them. Thanks, Chair.
Can I ask that the slide with the legislation and policy documents be put up again? I don't know what number it is. No, it's not that. Where's it now? Yeah. There we go. You see, Chairperson, the reason why I asked this question about DVA is, and that's what I'm missing. First of all, it's going to require a change in the Domestic Violence Act amendment. And it's not planned for. Look, we've amended with our process. But the fact of the matter is you still require that twice a year, every 6 months, reports to Parliament in terms of compliance to the Domestic Violence Act.
Yes.
Secondly, the second aspect that I think is important is the exemption aspect of the Domestic Violence Act. Previously, subs have asked for exemption from when they did, from the ICD. Now we're saying the Secretariat must take over that responsibility. And what I'm saying is that is the part that I'm missing within the presentation, is that transitional period, and also, you know, the first 6 months of the new financial year, well, they normally give that DVA reports, Nadia, beginning of the year and
after
middle year.
Beginning and after.
Yeah. So, you know, the first one is supposed to come to us, let's say June, July.
Yeah.
Who's going to do it? Yourself? ICD, have you put a process in place where you will combine the two? That is the issue I'm actually raising around DVAs as well.
And maybe secondly, the decision of the Constitutional High Court with regards to Hawks and the time frame of 18 months, have you taken that into consideration? And I'm asking that question because the white paper will be a massive project, a massive one, and it will take time. So have you put that in place and the processes so that we don't find ourselves running with this amendment, you know, just a month before the end of the 18 months?
Chair, just on the Hawks thing, we have a team that has been established jointly between ourselves and the Hawks, and also is going to involve somebody from Justice as well as a constitutional expert. The idea is because we've been given 18 months that it will be included, that aspect will become part and parcel of the white paper, and then it will have to be included in the SAPS Act, so we don't produce a SAPS Act and then bring an amendment. So and a team has already been established with the Hawks. We're waiting for Justice's representative for them to forward us, because they had specifically requested that they wanted to be part of the process. And we will also be involving a constitutional expert in that team. The idea is that what comes out of that team will go into the white paper and the SAPS Act. So it won't come suddenly at the last minute. In fact, we had already started, before the Constitutional Court judgment, we had started working on the policy because in terms of the current SAPS Act and the DPCI requirements, a policy document has to be developed. And we had worked jointly with the SAPS with the DPCI team on that joint policy document. And there were certain things in there which we already wanted to amend in the DPCI. The Constitutional Court judgment has just enforced that there are other areas that we also have to address as part of that. We also have said that the ministerial committee, which we were about to establish, should be put on hold pending the changes to the legislation. With regard to the DVA and the which was raised by Honourable Member Van Wyk, I think that's exactly one of the issues that the task team is thrashing out, is who's going to present, how's it going to work in that interim period. But it looks likely that the ICD will present the report in June, and we will take over after that. It's not on the legislative program because it's not possible to put everything on. I think we said when we started taking over the DVA thing, that we took over the monitoring, take over the monitoring of the DVA, that we want to make that monitoring more than just how many people complied, how many people didn't comply, etc., that we want to use that monitoring to look at where sections of the DVA Act need to be amended. But it's not going to be possible to do it in this year. And essentially, we probably wouldn't be in a position till the next report on the DVA to actually look at those sorts of amendments. Because that first report is going to be 6 months into the process. So you see from the ICD's APP, they still have it listed on their APPs that they will probably be presenting the June thing, because you can't have this person presents half the report and that person presents half the report and nobody really takes responsibility for the report. So the ICD would probably be responsible for the June report, and we will then produce the report from the end of that year. But it is one of the issues that is being discussed by the task team.
worried about dealing with the constitutional court case in terms of the white paper and the SAPS Act review. I hear what you say, and I mean, I think in the ideal world, yes. But maybe call me skeptic, and I think Ms. Lovell will support me, and Ms. Mulabatsi as well. I will leave him out because he can't, and I will leave you out as well because you can't be guilty of this, but the three of us can be. The SAPS Act is huge. We've all agreed on that. And what happens if there's a delay? And you've got to deal with the Constitutional Court. Because it's not only depending on you. When the white paper, once it's presented, this committee, and we've decided when we did our strategic workshop last week that we're going to do provincial hearings, which means we're physically going out to provinces. What happens if we are the delay? You've got a deadline. We don't have a deadline. And we've got other processes that we've got to go through as well. We've got other legislation and we've got other parliamentary processes. So I'm a bit worried that we're looking at that constitutional court just in terms of the SAPS Act. And I'm not saying let's not do it, but I would say let's have a backup plan. That if the SAPS Act is delayed, that one can deal with that the constitutional court case, taking it, even if it is as an amendment to the current SAPS Act. And then you can just take it, once you do the new act, you just, you know, transfer it. But I would really be cautioning against that approach. There's just too much that can go wrong.
Chairperson, before I'm being arrested for supporting her. you know the problem we're facing is that there is a time frame according to the Constitutional Court. At that time frame can lapse tomorrow. And then what will happen? You see, it will be impacting all and everything what the DPCI is doing. Immediately when the time frame lapses, everybody who has been charged or arrested or whatever, it will impact on that. Therefore, I'm supporting it half-heartedly, but I'm saying we're really having a very, very tiny problem that we must look at it with all our eyes that we can do. We must make sure that we try to succeed in doing this thing. If we fail, it will be a backlash to all of us, and specifically to the ruling party. It will hit it bad. Therefore, we must be very careful, because at the end of the day, we mustn't create a problem where we find that when we have a plan of trying to get out of this thing, I agree with her that we must have a backup plan immediately, and we must try to make that backup plan to be activated immediately, so that if we fail from A, we can jump to C immediately, so that we are able to be within the time frame, because the time frame by the court, it won't extend within an hour. It's just cut off. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think, Chair, the point is noted, and I think we need to be able to provide this portfolio committee with a backup plan so that you are prepared to, at short notice, have to enter into a debate or discussion. I think ideally we want to follow that process, but I would agree that there has to be a backup plan around it, because, and one of the things we need to also look up in that backup plan is how long it'll take at the Portfolio Committee and the NCOP, because if you look at the Secretariat and the ICD legislation and how long that process started, we sent it to, I mean, it's only finished now. So we would need to go back and look at that backup plan, which I think would probably be that it's part of the SAPS review, but it comes out as a separate amendment and is passed as a separate amendment. We may have to look at that, because the more I listen to people, the more I think how long it took us to pass a short piece of legislation like the Secretariat. Now we're going to have that thick SAPS Act. We may have to do it as part of the SAPS review, but introduce it as a separate amendment before the SAPS Act is even debated. So I think that's one of the things we may have to look at, not just as a backup plan, but as a plan. Because I think the Secretariat legislation took, what, 6 months? Just from when it was introduced in Parliament to getting passed because of having to go to the NCOP and back. And the DPCI legislation will be a 70. And the DPCI will probably be tagged as a 76 bill. It was last time. So maybe it's not a question about a backup plan, but listening to what the Portfolio Committee is saying here, is maybe we need to include it as part of the SACS amendment, but then bring it out as a separate amendment and bring it to the Portfolio Committee before the rest of the SAPS Act even comes here. That may be something that we have to do.
In fact, I would think that's the route you need to consider seriously then, to have that amendment taking place together with the SAPS review process. The criminal law forensic procedures amendment bill has not been signed even today by the president. So you have your own processes, we have our processes, but you also have the president's processes, which we do not know. And that, for now, it has proven to take long. So the 18 months you're talking about might actually be nothing. So I think we've got to look into that and prioritize so that we're done with that. Then we can deal with our sub-act, and that will form part of the process. Yeah. But I think it will be important to meet the target, otherwise we'll have a problem.
Needs to be taken in consideration is that this is going to be a highly politicized issue, as Honourable Law has indicated. And already we've picked up that not everybody's reading is the way we are reading it, and that there are those that believe that the ruling actually says that it must move away from the police back to justice, etc., etc. So it's going to be far more complicated. It might be simple amendments, but the process is going to be complicated.
It will be challenged, Chairperson. That we must always calculate that. It will be challenged. Whatever we do now, it will be challenged because we must make sure that we have that space. We mustn't come at the last minute, at 11 hour, because we will lapse on the 11 hour. It can be challenged at any time, you see. If it's challenged again, it takes us out of the time frame. Then again, bang. We are out of the loop.
So what the members are saying is that please prioritize this so that, if possible, deal with it separately. Let it come to us, that our process is well on time, and so on and so forth. That will assist us a great deal. Do you still have any other question? Any outstanding question, ma'am? Secretariat, do you want to make closing remarks?
We'd like to thank the Portfolio Committee, the Chair and the Portfolio Committee, for giving us this opportunity to actually present this report. And I think there are certain areas which we take on board what the Portfolio Committee has said completely and absolutely. I think the points made by Honourable Member Van Wyk and Honourable Member Ntlovo about us attending those meetings, we take those points on board. Some of the points that have been made by the Chair, we also take on board. What we would want to say is that I think that we need to come back to you within the next 2 weeks, have a discussion with the Minister about the concerns raised about the DPCI, and come back to you within the next 2 weeks about how we're going to handle that, because that affects the parliamentary program. So that it's fine for us to come up with a plan B, but the Portfolio Committee needs to understand that plan B and be ready for it. So I think we would commit ourselves to coming back to you within the next 2 weeks around that. But just to thank the Portfolio Committee for their time.
Thank you very, very much. In fact, it could be that whilst it might have been plan B, we might actually be saying consider making it plan A. It could be that we are saying that if possible, consider making it plan A so that we deal with this timelessly and we are not overtaken by events. Let me again thank you. Thank the Secretariat as well as her delegation. Really, I I'm telling you the truth if I'm saying I read this document like we are attending at this time. You are exhausted. You've been in meetings since morning, and you still have got to read some other documents. You can only do that if the document makes it possible for you to read it. And this is exactly what I discovered when I was reading this document. But I think for us and for me personally, it was actually a learning curve because I learned to understand exactly what is in the National Treasury's documents. Because sometimes when you interact with other people, it would seem like it's something that is not possible to put in paper, but this document is saying it's possible that which the National Treasury says or instructs us to do can be put in a document such as this one. And it is really encouraging to read this document, and it will make our life very easy as an overseeing institution and portfolio committee that is responsible to hold you accountable. It will be very easy to refer to this document. It will be easy for you to come before the portfolio committee and say, this is what we said you're going to do, but there were these challenges, we could not, but this is what we've done. So it's very easy to move together with the secretariat and probably to anticipate what the secretariat is doing at a particular time or will be doing later. I really would want to congratulate you for such a document. A very clear, professionally prepared. So we really are appreciating this, and we do hope that even if fortunately you did not serve divorce papers, you were about to. We do believe that. We want to believe that you, maybe other people might learn from these documents. If I was in the management position, I would simply take this document, read it, and see how it can assist me as a manager. And I think anybody else can do that. and that can assist us a great deal. I announced this morning that our budget debate will be on the 13th of April. That will be on Wednesday. The date had to change because on Tuesday the 12th, that would be our first day after the constituency period. And as according to Parliament program, we're expected to adopt this report before we can debate any budget vote. As a matter of fact, it must be 3 days before the budget vote debate. But of course, we will have to amend or suspend that rule so that we're able to debate. It is in our interest as a priority committee to have the debate on the day before the long constituency period that will take us to elections, because it means when we come back from that, we'll be able to focus on other areas of our work. And of course, we still have an overseas trip, so that will give us the time. And that is why, even if it was putting a lot of pressure on us, we thought it's important that we take that day. We do not say, no, let's go, you know, beyond elections, because it would mean if we did not take that slot, it would have meant that our debate will be after elections. So we therefore want to, apologize for really putting a lot of pressure on you, but also appreciate the fact that you managed to appear before the portfolio committee and you gave us such a well-prepared document. I think after reading it yesterday, I phoned the minister to say, you know, it brings some fresh air to read a document such as this one. So what do you want me to tell you about secretariat? I asked him, do you want to tell me about the secretariat? Because I could tell him anything from this document that you've prepared and when you're going to do what. And I really want to appreciate that. But of course, the very fact that you are an important office, and it is important of you to do things in the manner that is beyond reproach, in the manner that says we are setting an example to the Department of Police first, but any other institution
whether it is ICD or whatever, we really are appreciating these good documents that you've presented and you've prepared. I know there is nothing else left, and therefore this meeting is a standard agenda.